Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our show. So, and I'll be sending out some Golden Seeds newsletters as I get them done. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to episode 162 of the Organic Gardener Podcast. And I am super excited because today I am going back and interviewing the my friend from Podcaster's Paradise from episode number 1 that he actually had to record back then. And I was listening to it earlier and it's pretty funny, but still full of tons of golden seeds. I was like, I should replay this. Plus, I noticed, listeners, the only way I think you can download older versions is you have to go to my website. I don't think they're on iTunes anymore. I have to fix that. But today, anyway, I am here to talk with Denny Cray from Central Florida, who is a runner and always inspires me. He's one of the few emails whose emails go to my inbox and I read regularly, even though I don't get to run enough. And I just think I found out a lot of my listeners are in Florida where he's at. And so I figured it was a good cross section. So he said, Denny, why don't you come back on and we'll talk about gardening and fitness and nutrition and just anything that we can share, because he has so many golden seeds, like I said, to share with you guys. So welcome back to the Organic Gardener Podcast, Denny.
Well, thanks. Thanks for bringing me back, Jackie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, so I can take this off the record, but are you a millennial?
I think technically I'm in that kind of, the gray area, if you will, where my birthday is in 82. So like I'm technically,
I think you're totally in there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that, and maybe this is me trying to pick the best of both worlds, but I feel like sometimes, you know, if you're like 3 or 4 years on either side of whatever they define as the line between the generations, mm-hmm. that you're kind of really a blend of both. So hopefully maybe I'm a blend of the positive, most positive aspects of millennialhood and Gen X, but right. I don't know. That's for you to decide, I guess.
Well, that's why I was asking, because I always love millennials, and I was going to say you're another one of those rock star millennials out there changing the world for the better and taking care of our
case,
planet
and
the people.
I am absolutely a millennial. If you love millennials, then yes.
Love millennials. I hate when people bash them. I don't understand. I'm like, well, you don't know the millennials I hang out with, because the millennials I know are like rocking this world and care about the environment and care about social responsibility. And they're just doing everything they can to make our planet and our societies a better place. So I love millennials. I know they get a bad rap sometimes, but the ones I know are just like amazing. So, and I count you in there.
Well, thank you. I was just going to say, if you paint with a broad enough brush over any type of, distinguishing characteristic, whether it's, generations or, whatever, socioeconomic, whatever. I mean, you're always going to find, if you want to find bad, you can find bad. If you want to find good, you can find good. So it's if you're looking for the good in millennials, there's plenty of that. And just like any other thing where you're looking for, if you're looking for good people, you'll find good people.
Well, that'd be me. I always try to find the best in everyone, and I'm an eternal optimist. So, all right. Well, do you want to tell listeners a little bit about yourself? I mentioned you're in Central Florida and you have a daughter, right? And your wife mm-hmm. live there? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I live it's Lakeland, Florida, which is basically right between Tampa and Orlando. So if you kind of threw a dart at the center of the state, you'd be pretty much, right in my neck of the woods here. Didn't grow up here. I grew up in Northern Michigan. So I'm familiar with cold winters and four seasons and all that kind of stuff. But moved down here for college and more or less have been here ever since. And, it's on the gardening side, it's been an adjustment because I'm used to four seasons and like, I'm not used to have like literally like I picked tomatoes yesterday. You know, in December, whatever yesterday was, the 18th of December, I'm picking tomatoes, which obviously growing up in northern Michigan, that's something you don't even dream about doing that. It's so far-fetched. So getting used to when things, when to plant things has been an adjustment. And, you know, just the differences between, you know, cold weather or four-season gardening and landscaping and caring for your yard and your property versus down here, things are quite a bit different, but it's been an adjustment. And it's been a lot of fun. And like you said, on the non-gardening side, I like to run and just try to, you know, that's kind of my outlet, what I do. That's what my podcast is all about. And just, you know, overall being healthy. And that's where kind of the merging of the two of fitness and activity and also taking care of yourself food wise, nutrition wise. And, you know, nothing tastes better than something that you grow in your own garden. You walk out and pick and it's on the table within an hour. Like that's the ultimate right there for me when it comes to fresh food and healthy living. So that's a little bit about me. I don't know where else you want to go. We can go wherever you want to go.
Okay. Well, you got your degree in nutrition, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about the nutritional part of growing your own food and organic eating?
My degree is in athletic training. So it's in sports medicine. It's more of the injury prevention, injury recovery type of things for athletics. Okay. But we definitely talk about nutrition and I've done most of my continuing education and kind of just the you know recertification stuff that I have to do every couple of years has almost exclusively been nutrition based and the role of food and, you know, food is medicine type of thing. So I don't want to just paint industrial, you know, agriculture and things like that, big ag, if you will, with a completely bad lens. But you know, there is something, like I said, I think there's something to be said about growing your own, about just that pride that you have. And also, I mean, you know, the fact that you pick it when it's fresh, you can control what's on it. So you know that there's not any pesticides on it, which, you know, again, without trying to step on too many toes, but just being honest, like, you know, whether or not the chemicals and the sprays and all that stuff are bad for us or not, which I kind of think that they probably can't be good. They may not be bad, but I don't think they can be good. I'd rather not have anything. I'd rather know that, you know, I'd just rather know. I like to have that ownership and know what's going on. So, I'm of the belief that, that it doesn't get much healthier than when you grow it and pick it and, you know, and you're there throughout the whole process. Even if it's just the, you know, in the mind that makes it taste better and seem healthier, I don't know. I just think that, and I'm probably preaching to the choir with this audience, but, there's something special about having that sweat equity on your dinner plate, and it's worth every ounce of time and energy and effort that goes into it.
Okay, so let's take a little like kind of thing from John's show. Like lately, he's been asking people. So as an expert, like what's one thing that you think the ordinary person or the ordinary listener, who like you said, you're maybe preaching to the choir, like one thing that we wouldn't maybe know that you know as an athletic specialist or as somebody who's taking a lot of classes and continuing ed in, you know, healthier living? Like what's one thing that we might be surprised about, or maybe something new that you learned lately? Or
I think one thing that I really believe in, and I can't remember, it's been a little bit, but I mean, not like years and years and years, but I can't remember exactly when I heard this. It's been something that's been kind of rattling around in my brain for a little bit, but the idea that when we get hunger signals, when our brains are telling us that we're hungry, it's not so much that we need calories. Like that's not what the craving is that we're craving some type of vitamin, mineral, nutrient, something like that. And our body's, you know, saying we're looking for something. So when you get a pang for a certain food, like maybe you're low on sodium, so you're craving something salty. So you go up for the potato chips or something, which probably isn't the best choice, but you know, you go for something that's towards your craving. Well, the idea is that you know, when we're eating more processed foods and things of that nature, we get this signal that we're hungry because we're looking for a vitamin, we're looking for some type of mineral and nutrient source, and then we eat something that is maybe less than nutrient packed and nutrient dense. So you know, our stomach fills up and our brain says, all right, we're full, and then you know, the reason you're hungry again in 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever it might be, is that your body's going through that food and going, well, shoot, that nutrient that we were looking for, still missing. So we're still hungry. So, long-winded way of trying to answer your question is that I think that maybe some people think that, you know, when you're hungry, what you're going for is calories. And really, I think, and I've noticed this in my own life and not, you know, with rigorous studies, but just from my own experience that, you know, the more nutrient dense food I'm eating, which tends to be the fresh and the local and things of that nature, the less hungry I am because my body's getting the nutrients it needs. It's getting the vitamins and the minerals and the all the stuff that comes from the ground, you know, that has, you know, with good produce. And like I said, hopefully the stuff that I'm growing or the stuff that I get from the local guy down the road that grows, you know, is organic produce that we get for 6 months of the year. You know, those are the times that I'm not hungry. And I think it's because my body's not craving nutrients as much as it is, you know, if I'm on the road and I'm not eating as well as I would like to, or, you know, if I kind of fall off of the healthy, fresh, organic kind of bandwagon.
Awesome. This was the greatest thing for me to hear today, because I'm just like looking at my mastery journal. I got, like, if you subscribe to John's new mastery journal thing, they'll send you the first 30 pages. So I just downloaded that last night, and I'm like trying to decide what's my goal going to be. Like, is it, I want it to have something to do with fitness. And I'm trying, going back and forth between, should it be the exercise piece or should it be the food piece? Like, I could really, because my big struggle is, like, because I'm teaching, which, you know, and I'm not living, like, I don't have the best living situation over there, so I eat a lot of processed food. I find myself, I go to Subway a lot. I go because it's convenient, it's easy. I was telling the Organifi guy one day, I'm like, I don't even have time to like mix the Organifi. I know it can't get any easier than like put the superfood in the, last week I even took jars, put that, like scooped it all out on Sunday. I'm like, all right, here I go, I can't fail with this one. All I should do is add the water, and still there's two jars that I didn't get to on my desk. Like, that's how busy you are as a teacher. It's just crazy. From like, I have kids in my room at 7:30 in the morning, and I get done at 6 at night, and pretty much it's nonstop kids. So like, I'm thinking like, I need to be more prepared. Last summer I did the Food Babes quit your cravings thing, and it works so good. And I'm like, how can I put that back into like my daily thing, especially when I'm living such a transitory life? And then I was thinking, well, should I go with like eating more organic food? Should I go with like just following the Food Babes plan? But that's going to be hard to do when I'm sometimes living out of a cooler a lot of days.
Right.
But then do I just have to put my mind to it? So this is a great thing for me to hear, because, and I like, I'm back to those cravings again. So it's the perfect time for me. So maybe other listeners are interested.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and then, you know, variety as always. So, you know, if you're always eating the same couple of things, then you're not getting, you know, if my theory holds true, then you're not getting all the variety of nutrients and whatnot. So try to add some variety as well, which will help.
Cool. I like that. Well, do you want to tell us like about your garden? Did you grow a garden this year? I know you've been like super busy and just have a ton of stuff going on. Like, don't you even have a book coming out?
I'm working on a book. Yeah, the entrepreneur's curse, I guess, is that you're always doing something, right? And you're always doing something, and something means you're always doing a half a dozen things, I guess. But yeah, I have been busy. We're you know, the podcast is up over to 350 episodes now, which is crazy to even think about. You know, coaching runners, and so doing that, and yeah, the garden, and working on a book, and just always working on six things, and you know, going six different directions, and trying to be somewhat of a good husband and a present dad once in a while too, and running around in circles, but yeah, the garden is going well. I don't remember exactly where we were when we talked the first time, but I know that the struggle with me for my garden has been the soil quality, because I live in a subdivision type of thing where when our house was built, it's a lot of fill sand and certainly not quality soil. So that's been the battle that I've been fighting for the entire, I don't know what it's been, 3 or 4 years since I've had the garden, is trying to improve the soil quality without just dumping a bunch of fertilizer and things like that on it. Because, I mean, obviously that's not improving the quality. That's just, you know, maybe right now getting a little shot for your plants, but not making the soil any better. And I was composting for a bit, and that was going all right. And in the last maybe year and a half or so, I've gotten into, I don't even know how to pronounce it, the vermiculture or whatever, where you use worms to compost for you. And that's been going really good. I got a bucket out on my, you know, big, like a tote, like a, whatever it is, a 30 gallon tote or something like that. Maybe not that, 18 gallon, something like, you know, like the thing you get at Home Depot or whatever that you pack your blankets in over in the summertime. And, I just put my food scraps there, and I got a bunch of worms in that thing, and they do their work, and it's cool to kind of recycle the food scraps that way and improve the soil. And every so often, every couple, 3 months, I put a bunch of fresh worm castings onto the soil and trying to add some more mulch and things of that nature, do some cover crops and whatnot to try to improve the soil. And it's coming along. It's coming along. Like I said, I picking tomatoes yesterday. So I've got, you know, it's a small garden. It's, I mean, growing up, like we had a huge garden, and I wouldn't even call it, I call mine now more of a flower bed than a garden, but it's enough to have a couple of, you know, I got 4 tomato plants growing and some basil, and I'll be putting some kale, some quote unquote, you know, Florida winter crops in here in the next couple of weeks, probably. But I think it's probably 10 feet by 12 feet or something like that. So it's small, but it's enough to have a couple of fresh bits of produce here and there. And now that the soil quality is improving, hopefully that means the yield will be better and the tomatoes taste good, which is half the battle right there. So it's exciting. It's exciting to watch that improve and to see the yield come out of the improved soil quality.
Oh my goodness, you're full of golden seeds. Okay, so vermiculture, you're putting worms in a bag? Bucket?
It's bad? It's like a bin, like a plastic storage tote type of deal.
Oh, I know
what
you're talking. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
going crazy at school with not collecting the compost. Mm-hmm. Like, it just drives me crazy to see. I feel like they're just throwing all this money in the garbage every day, and I've been trying to figure out, like, how we could do it. That'd be so fun. The kids would love, like, a big tub full of worms to watch eating it, and then so does that, like, did you say you're only changing it every 3 months? Wait, what did I say?
Well, yeah, it's about like that, because I mean, you got to think it's there's 3 of us that are eating here, so we're not loading lots and lots of stuff into the bin every day. So, and of course, it takes the worms a little while to work through the food waste, but every couple 3 months it gets full enough that you kind of, there's a little art to it where you push all of the stuff that's in there to kind of one side, and then you put a bunch of the fresh, you know, food waste on the other side of it, and then the worms kind of migrate across to where all the food source is, and then you can scoop out the castings that they've created, so that you're not taking all the worms and dumping all the worms out into your garden at the same time, so you can kind of keep that process going and recycling through. But yeah, it's just every so often, you know, the more food waste we would have, the quicker it would come through. But that's about the rate that it seems to turn over for us. But yeah, just throw it on and mix it in with the, you know, right around the plants if I'm planting something at that moment, or if it's kind of cover crop season, just kind of sprinkle it throughout the garden and let it kind of work its magic. And it's slow, you know, it's just like anything. It's like you could throw a bunch of fertilizer on it to have that instant kick, or you can do it the right way, which will last for longer, but it takes a little bit to get there. But it's been, I think, the right decision. And, you know, it's nice to be able to dig a shovel into the garden and see pretty much black dirt the entire length of the shovel, as opposed to when I first started, and it would be like the first quarter of an inch was black dirt, and then everything after that was all sand. So we're getting there. We're making progress.
Oh my gosh, I think this is awesome. I think people are going to be super encouraged that, you know, it does take a while, but they can get there. And it's true, like, dirt is without a doubt the biggest problem, I think, coming up with a healthy soil. Where do you get that compost? Where do you get that food? And it sounds like worms is working. So, like, you're just 3 people, but what I'm thinking is, well, I have 17 kids, but we basically mm-hmm. only eat breakfast, and maybe we get snack late in the afternoon. Like, I'm not talking about the cafeteria yet, but right. My kids do only eat in the cafeteria at lunch because we have them in our classrooms at breakfast. So like mm-hmm. that breakfast, like if each teacher had one of those bins full of worms, mm-hmm. it would be this constant science experiment if they were just recycling the breakfast part.
Yeah.
And then if we can figure out, because like it's been winter, you know, we started the garden club at the beginning of November. We missed the first 2 main months anyway. So then now, like, the compost bin is covered in snow. But I'm thinking before I know it, it's going to be popping open. And then if I can get, like, I don't know, they've got all these bins down there. And then he does have this heated greenhouse. We have this guy from the food court who's kind of helping us with it. And he works in there. And we could have, like, a bigger compost in there. And like the worms is like, sounds like a good solution to my plant. I'm so excited. I'm so glad we're talking today.
Awesome. And
this woman on from Canada who talked about vermicomposting. Her name was Kathy Nelson, I think. She was so funny. She was like hysterical. I laughed the whole time I was talking to her from Toronto. And so that's like 2 totally different.
All right.
Okay. All right. Back to where we were. You were telling us some awesome stuff about vermicomposting, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is it vermiculture?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, that's what I've called it, yeah. But I think both ways it flies. But I was just saying that, you know, I got my I ordered my worms from a guy in Pennsylvania. So clearly they're not, you know, don't have to be hyper local. You just have to make sure to protect them in the wintertime, but which for me isn't a problem because, you know, that two nights a year that it gets really, really cold, I can just throw a blanket over top of the bin and it's tucked right up against the house. So it's protected. So it's fine. And then in the, you know, I almost have more problem in the summertime when it's hot, even though it's not in the sun, it's still hot. So you kind of have to try to make sure there's enough, you know, there's enough stuff in there to kind of keep them insulated. But yeah, I mean, it'll work any climate zone. As long as you don't let them freeze or don't let them cook in the sun, you're pretty much good to go.
Oh my gosh, this is hysterical. I can just imagine. Because like we've been talking about writing a paper about our class pet. And my kids want a class pet. And we'll be like, all right, I got us a class pet. Here's 100 worms.
100 of them. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. How many worms does come in like a package? Like, is it 100? Or
I think
I just made that up.
I think I got 500 was the smallest quantity I could get.
Oh my goodness.
But it sounds like a lot, but they're like not like big nightcrawler type of worms. Like the ones that go in a bin are a much smaller variety. And I mean, it's like basically it's like if you put your two hands together, it would be like a heaping handful on your two hands. So it's not ridiculous quantities. And you know, like I said, they do their work. They work fast. So as long as you got a steady stream of food products, which sounds like you would, like you'd have no problem keeping them going. And it would be a really cool thing to see, I think, in the classroom environment.
I do too. Oh my gosh, it's so awesome. And I won't feel so guilty about it. The kids are all like, let's get a rabbit. I have thought about getting a hedgehog. But then somebody's like, can you have a hedgehog? I just like told the kids, I'm like, I'm not good at a pet. I can't keep anything in a cage. Right. I was like, I'm going to let it go eventually and then it'll be trouble.
The worms are pretty like, self-sustaining too. You don't have to worry too much about, you know, keep some food in there every once in a while and it'll be great for this classroom too. Cause you need to throw some, like I throw like junk mail and stuff in there. You need to throw some paper products in there to kind of help keep it dry and to give them something else to munch on besides just the food. So, I mean, you know, throwing in scrap paper and stuff is perfect.
Yeah,
so like
we have lots of that.
Phone. Yeah, yeah.
The kids go through some paper for sure. Oh, fun. Oh, my goodness. And I save it, too. I have, like, bins and bins of, like, the itty-bitty, like, tiny pieces of construction paper. Like, I'll cut out a circle and I save all. I'm like, oh, you can make a triangle out of that. Or we're going to make a collage someday. And I think I still have, like, papers from, like, Head Start in 2007. I kid you not that, like, I recycled that. Like, that will be awesome. And everyone will be like, Jackie finally got rid of her clutter.
Solving all kinds of problems with worms. Is that all?
I know. And then the other awesome thing I love is like, so my first year, Mike and I, like we've always, his like big thing is to like grow enough food for us to make it through the year. But that's like just too much for me. I'm always working full time. And like last summer, both of us were working full time. It's like first time ever in our married life, I think, that we both worked all summer long. So we had like the smallest garden we've ever had. And my granddaughter, actually, like I loved her little garden. She planted like, you know, it was just like yours, maybe a little bigger than yours, but like, you know, just a little, I don't know, it might only be an 8x8 foot pen or a 10x10 foot little garden. Her sunflowers were so big. And so I have thought about my garden challenge this year being like, I always said, if I was going to start over, I would start with a small, like 3x4 bed and then an 8x10 bed. And the 3x4 bed would be like hip high. And that's where I would put like my tomatoes and like some things. That's how Mike started. And then the bigger, the 8x10 bed would be like a raised bed, but that I can sit on the edge. I like my beds wide enough. And then I can go down there and I can harvest and I can weed and I'm sitting in just like two beds and maybe a raspberry patch or something little. Mm-hmm. But just like I've been thinking about that would make a good 2017 garden challenge because I don't know. I just like the idea of a small family. And maybe that's what I'll try to do. And then if Mike does his mini farm thing, I think he's going to go all out with the mini farm. But I'm going to plant like the little garden for us to eat out of through the summer and try it because I've never really done that. He always does the gardening. So anyway, tell us about your small. So what else did you grow besides tomatoes?
Well, that's what's growing right now because it's still kind of the summer, you know, there's two summer seasons, if you will, in our part. So it's, you know, I plant the tomatoes for the fall, the end of the year summer season, kind of in the beginning of September, beginning to middle of September to harvest, you know, kind of between now and the middle of January when we will probably get a frost or two, which will kind of wear things out at that point. So sometime, you know, in the next month, the tomatoes will be running their course because it'll be just a little bit too cold. But then, you know, like I said, starting in the next couple weeks or really probably a week ago, but I should have started, but I haven't gotten there yet. Like kale, broccoli, things like that are kind of cold season. The kale in my past experience seems to do better. I don't know. It seems to hold up to the heat better once the heat starts to show back up in, you know, end of February, beginning of March. So get a couple of months of pretty good, fresh kale for smoothies or sauteed or whatever. And then try to get the second round of tomatoes back into the ground by about Valentine's Day so that they're ready to go by the first part of May, because once we get to the middle of May, it's too hot and the bugs are too crazy and things just start to almost rot because it rains so much. So you get some root rot and some bug infestation. So kind of tomatoes and maybe some carrots. I do use carrots every once in a while. And I've had pretty good luck with some herbs, with basil especially, and some mint. But just always trying, always experimenting, always trying different things that might be interesting. I grew sunflowers this year for the first time, and kind of put those up as almost like a buffer against the side of the screened in back porch. So it's just nice to have a little something to look at. And when those, you know, when the heads blew up on those and you got the big yellow, it was pretty to look at. And so just always experimenting. I'm still in the early stages. I've got some blueberries that haven't quite figured those out yet, but I need to get a better variety. I think the variety I have isn't quite situated for the no freeze, the no cold time. But just like gardening anywhere, it's a constant experiment, and you learn and you try to take some notes and then be able to find your notes the next year so you can, you know, not make the same mistake a second time, which I'm not very good at doing. Is like I'm always you know, trying to say, all right, yeah, by Valentine's Day I need to plant my tomatoes, and usually it's about the second or third of March that I'm planting them, and then they're always, you know, a couple weeks from being ready before it gets too hot in the summertime. So it's a constant battle. But so far we've had carrots well. I've had green beans halfway decent. And like I said, kale, broccoli, tomatoes, those have been the best crops for me so far.
Tell me a kale recipe. What do you do when you saute kale?
I am a huge believer in just keeping things simple. So it's literally kale with some either olive oil or butter, or sometimes maybe a little bit of both, and some garlic. And that's about it. And maybe a little bit of salt thrown on top, and just kind of cook it until it softens up just a little bit, till it starts to wilt. And I don't like it when it gets way too cooked. I like to still have a little bit of crunch to it, but not, you know, not obviously not raw level of crunch, but hit it on the stove for just a couple minutes. And that's about it. I mean, I don't make it fancy. It's good like that to me, for my taste buds at least.
Do you mix anything with it though? Just kale and olive oil, huh?
That's pretty much it, yeah. And just make that as, you know, whatever kind of the green on the plate for that night. And it's, I don't know. I don't know if my wife loves it that way quite as much as I do. But we don't have it, you know, every day, but a couple times a week during the season. And, you know, I enjoy it. And I don't much like greens very often. The traditional Southern greens where they've been cooked in the crock pot for a couple days and they're just mush. That doesn't do it for me. Yeah. I need a little crunch in my greens. So that seems to work well.
Me too. I like crunchy greens. So is there something excited to try next year that you've never done before that we haven't talked about?
A couple of trying to figure out some fruit. Like I said, I've tried the blueberries, and I think that I need a different variety, one that, because I know they have blueberries locally, so I just know I didn't get the right variety. Screwed up. I foolishly bought them at like Lowe's or Home Depot or something like that, thinking that we'd get ones that were Florida specific, and they're not. So I need to replace those. But I've been thinking about trying figs. I know the fig trees grow down here. It seems like just about every other house has them. I've got a spot picked out, so I need to put a fig plant in and give it a couple years and see what happens. But it'd be nice. If push came to shove, I'm more of a fruit than a vegetable guy, so it'd be nice to have some fruit here and figs. I know they'll grow in the heat, so let's give it a shot and see what happens.
Are they Italian? My mom has a fig tree that grows like delicious figs. They're really cool. They're so different than what you see in the store. You know, they're green. Mm-hmm. And just, they kind of remind me of like a cross between a pear and a kiwi. You know, mm-hmm. There's no fuzz, but they've kind of got like, that's what they remind me of anyway. But yeah, they're delicious. I bet you'll love that if you get that going.
Yeah. And I mean, I've had them before from folks that have grown them. So I know that I'll like them. It's just, it's one of those things where it's just a matter of, you know, I can have this plan in my mind, but, you know, do it. And it's, I mean, all I got to do is dig a hole. Like, it's not that difficult. There's no real good excuse for why it won't happen. So I just need to make it happen. Take 2 hours one day to go and get a good healthy plant from a local nursery and put it in the ground. That's, I mean, it'd be done and done.
Okay. Well, you'll get it done at the right time.
Yes.
How about, is there something that didn't work so well this season that like didn't go the way you thought it, you had planned it to?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that I've also had some success with okra, but this year I didn't have much success with the okra, and I think I know why. I think it was just because we had a very wet kind of spring and summer, and my okra, I've learned for whatever reason that if I start plants in pots and then transplant them, it's worked a lot better than trying to sow the seeds directly into the ground. And I don't know exactly why that is, but for whatever reason, I started my okra this year, and they were looking beautiful, and I put them in the ground and they sprouted up, and I mean they were growing like crazy, and I got like the first first bit of pods of okra, and then I mean like as soon as I'd harvest the first round, they just kind of, all the leaves started falling off and pretty much just crapped out. I don't know what exactly, I didn't know at the time exactly what happened, because usually they're the kind of thing that will just keep producing, and eventually you just kind of, you know, get sick of them, and it starts to cool down a little bit, and you pull them out because you're ready to plant something else. And this year they didn't. And then when I went to go take them out of the ground, it was like there was like all of them had just no roots basically, and just I think it was just so wet that the roots never had to grow out, never had to expand to try to find any water, any moisture. And then for whatever reason, they just the roots never developed. And doesn't take long for a plant to shut it down when the roots aren't there. So so that was a bummer this year, because we like the okra during the summertime. It's one of the few things that actually grow down here in the heat and in the summer. So it was kind of a bummer to lose out on that this year. But c'est la vie. We'll try again next year and hopefully have a better year, because 2 years ago they had a great crop. So, you know, we'll see what happens next year. Fingers crossed we'll have a better one in 2017.
Okay. So we're going to take some time to say thank you from our sponsors. Organifi Green Juice is a gently dried superfood mix that supports health, mental clarity, while detoxifying your body, all in one delicious drink. What I love about Organifi, it makes me feel great. It's easy. It doesn't take much time. It's full of nutrients and superfoods that I have a hard time getting anywhere else, and it just tastes delicious. Now, as a teacher, you all know that our time is totally limited. I have kids in my classroom from 7:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. So just even using this simple thing can be difficult for me, but I can pull it off and so can you. If you want to feel good and get all your greens in a simple, easy drink, remember, you can get a discount as an Organic Gardener podcast listener by entering code OGP16, and Organifi will give you a 15% discount now. So just go to Organifi.com, and when you go to checkout, enter code OGP16, and they'll give you 15% off your order anytime. Denny, are you ready to get to the root of things?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. So which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there something you have to get out there and force yourself to do?
I think the end of the season stuff is probably my least favorite. Like when I first planted, or when I'm preparing to plant, I don't mind doing the weeding. I don't mind doing the kind of tilling the ground and all that kind of stuff. I don't mind doing that at all. When things are first planted and growing up, I don't mind kind of keeping things neat and keeping it tidy. But once it kind of has run its course and nothing's really producing anymore, I start to get lazy, which of course then means that the weeds start to take over, which then of course means that the weeds start to go to seed, which means now that the weeds are really, going to be ready for the next season as well. So kind of those end of the season chores are just not really my thing.
I can totally relate to that. I'm lucky if I can make it to the end of the season. I kind of fade out in the middle of like the summer when it's hot, and I'm like, what? I have to go water again? Didn't I just water like yesterday?
Exactly.
So on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Oh, I mean, nothing at all beats walking out to pick dinner, you know, while you're already cooking dinner. So, you know, if that's walking out to grab a couple tomatoes to go on top of the salad or as a side dish, or, you know, if it, when it's, you know, kale season or green beans or something like that. You start the water to cook, or you start the pan to warm up, and you go out and clip the kale and bring it right in and throw it. I mean, just, you know, from the garden to the pan in less than 2 or 3 minutes, it's nothing better than harvesting and enjoying the spoils of your garden, you know, within minutes after picking it. It's fantastic.
Aw, I like that. Jenny, what's the best gardening advice you ever received? Is that what you told us before about, what was it? I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'll just go with something different. Don't worry about it. Okay. I think that I heard this from somebody. I can't remember if it was in a book that I read or if it was from talking to somebody in person. But I think it might have been an article or a book, but regardless, something to the extent of the best thing that a farmer can put on his crops is his shadow. So just, you know, that the idea of being out there observing, you know, even if you're not doing anything, I try to walk out and, you know, for me, walking through the garden takes all of about a minute, so it doesn't take very long. But just walk out there every day and just try to, you know, be observant, you know, if you can, just to see what's going on, just to, you know, watch the process, even though it's obviously slow. I mean, plants don't grow that much overnight very often, but, you know, just to be out there and put your shadow on your crops every day. It's calming. It is good for the mind and, maybe kind of good for the body and the spirit as well. So that's a piece of advice that I've always kind of tended to once I started my own garden, that's kind of been something that's stuck with me ever since.
Aw, I like that. And that's true. The best thing a farmer can do is put his crops in his shadow. So just being out there with them and watching them. And I think you find, like, I noticed, like, one of the reasons Mike doesn't get a lot of weeds is because he's just always out there looking around. And if he sees, mm-hmm. like, a weed pops up, he grabs it. So it's like he's just always grabbing. I swear he must do, like, the equivalent of, like, 100 sit-ups a day or whatever. Like, bending over and picking something out of the ground. But, you know, it just kind of, like, you know, keeps them weeded, or that you'll notice if they need water, or just keeping an eye on it. And it does, like, make you feel like that you were saying before about a sense of pride and something's growing that you're taking care of, and it makes it taste better. And I think that's true for kids too. They like to get out there and do that.
Yeah.
I was thinking what you were telling us before was the thing about the nutrient dense food, and that the healthier the food is, that gets rid of your cravings. If you're getting minerals from eating,
I certainly believe that. I just that wasn't as much of a gardening advice as a nutrition advice, I think. But it certainly, I'm all in on that too.
How about, what's your favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Oh boy, probably I'll go with maybe multi-use functionability of a pitchfork. You can kind of rake with it, you can dig with it, you can harvest with it, you can weed with it, and you can do a lot of things with a decent pitchfork. So that's probably my my most commonly used tool around here. I think that'll work for now.
I think pitchforks are important. We have two of them. You have to, like, we always have one in our compost pile without a doubt, and we have two of those at least. Mike was talking about getting a third one, I think. So what's your favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? Is it just like sauteing vegetables, or do you have something that you specifically like?
I'm probably the saute thing. Like I said, I like to keep things simple. I kind of feel like if you have good ingredients, and this goes to, you know, for whether it's you know, produce or meat sources or whatever. It's just always been my experience that if you have, start with good ingredients and maybe don't try to screw it up too much, like, you end up with something that tastes pretty good. So, you know, a simple saute, a simple steam, something like that, to something that's fresh. Maybe a little salt if that's your thing, and stay out of the way. And that's pretty much my favorite way of doing most cooking. It's easy. It's quick. There's not a whole lot of mess involved, and it tastes good. So that's my go-to is the quick and easy.
Nice. What's your favorite internet resource? Is there anywhere you go to look for gardening stuff?
Can I say Google? Is that too vague?
Nope.
You know, I mean, just Googling things. Like, I don't have any really blogs that I frequent or things of that nature where I'm always looking at stuff. You know, obviously, like I said earlier, I'm still, even though I've been doing this now for 3 or 4 years and, or maybe 4 or 5 years in Florida, I'm still learning about the Florida seasons and how, you know, the difference of things that I have learned and knew is true in Michigan, and the growing season up there certainly aren't necessarily true in something that works down here. So just trying to find, you know, just Googling things for Florida. So I may end up at different blogs. I may end up at, you know, some of the University of Florida kind of agricultural extension websites. I just wherever I end up, but it's usually something on the Google that, you know, whatever problem I'm dealing with, and then, you know, Florida or Central Florida or something like that, because we do have a couple different climate zones here. So you got to make sure you're in the right specific climate zone. But, man, if you can't find it on Google, you're not looking hard enough, I think. So that's probably my favorite online resource, at least.
Perfect. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine? Anything
you recommend
there?
Yeah, I used to really, really like Organic Gardening, and now they've kind of changed it to Organic Living, which is still a great magazine, but just a little less garden specific, which is mm-hmm. fine. But I just haven't, I haven't gotten into it quite as much. I still read it on occasion. So that's probably my favorite, you know, in print type of reading and advice and learning type of thing when it comes to the gardening aspect.
How about for running, since you're, in case there's any runners out there, because I'm kind of interested in running. I haven't been running because I did the thing that you talk about a lot, is I injured my knee last year and just mm-hmm. haven't really run much this year.
As far as just resources in general?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's your Runner's World, things like that are pretty good. And it's online and in print if you're looking. But it's, I mean, really this
same publishers wrote as the Organic Gardening Magazine Runner's yeah. World, right? Is Rodale's?
Yep. But then again, I mean, Google, you know, just Google it. But then, of course, you have to, you know, if you start Googling too much, if you know, there's not necessarily everything that's on the internet is true. So you got to kind of start ciphering through and seeing if something's just harebrained or if it's actually legitimate. But that's a good place to start, I think, at least right, you know, maybe it's the millennial in me coming through, but you just start off with the Google and then kind of go from there versus whatever Google brings up for you.
Okay, cool. How about, I guess I'll just hit you up with my final question, which I probably did not ask you because I don't think I came up with it until like episode 13. So it goes, it's a big one. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
That's a good question there, Jackie. You're very welcome. Trying to stall myself here so I can get a second to think. There's so many things.
Take your time. I can edit it.
No, I try to make this easy for you. I know what it's like to have to edit a whole bunch of stuff. So, you know, maybe just on the local level, you know, like I said, I live in the subdivision with the homeowners association and the whole nine yards, and some of the rules that they have, and this, you know, I know that there's even some where it's like this at the state level, where the state will try to get in and try to, you know, either support the homeowners association rules or sometimes go against them. But it's just like, you know, the push for the green lawns and the amount of pesticides that go on the lawns. And like, if you don't take care of your grass good enough, you get fined and you get this, that, and the other. And it's like, you know, I would rather plant natives. I'd rather plant things that don't need, I mean, granted, I live in Florida where most of the year we get plenty of rain. So it's not a big deal with the watering. But, you know, if you're in an area where there's water restrictions and you know, why do local municipalities and homeowner associations and things of that nature put the emphasis on you have to have green grass? Like, why can't we have native grasses? Why can't we have desert type of, you know, or arid type of plants and cacti and things of that nature that don't need the water as much and are still beautiful if you let them grow? And they may not be as beautiful if you try to manicure them, you know, 3/4 of an inch from the ground all the time. But if you let them grow and do what they do, they are pretty. So I think that just maybe on a local level, I would love to see some of those restrictions. You know, like we have to, if we do anything with the yard, we have to get it approved first. And thankfully our association is pretty good about approving most stuff, but it's just like, you know, I know if I wanted to tear out my front yard and put in a garden up there, they would frown upon that. So maybe just some of those local restrictions on what you can do with your yard would be nice to get those taken away.
Nice. Cool. I'll bet a lot of listeners would agree with that, because one of my most popular episodes is my brother talked about landscaping and living in the suburbs, mm-hmm. and people mm-hmm. really related to that. So I'll bet they'll relate to this too. All right. Well, so just, do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
I mean, I don't know if I have one that I could cite from somebody else other than just, you know, like, I mean, there's just something kind of like I've talked about a couple times, that the pride factor, it just feels good, you know, to do something that's good for you, that's good for your environment. So, you know, just don't be afraid of what you don't know, because that held me back in Florida for a while. I didn't know how to grow down here. And, you know, just get some seeds and start, and, you know, maybe do a better job than I do of taking notes on what works and what doesn't, but, you know, start and then learn. And, once you pick that first tomato, or once you, get that first beautiful head of lettuce or whatever it is that you're growing, and you realize that, like, wow, like I did this, you'll be back for more. It gets addictive, and it can kind of take over, as I'm sure some folks can attest to that are listening to this. They start with something like what I've got and end up with acres and acres of land that they're taking care of. But it's worth it. It's worth it. So just keep going. Keep, you know, getting those dirt under your nails and your hands dirty, and keep producing, because it's a fun thing to do, and it's something that I think is good for you. Like I said earlier, good for your mind and your body and your soul. So keep it up.
Awesome. You've been full of tons of golden seeds. I'm so glad you came back on. All right. So tell people, like, how to connect with you, and, like, what's going on with your pod. Like, tell them what your podcast is and your website and, like, the stuff you offer. Because, like I said, even though it's not gardening, I'm sure there's, you know, quite a few runners or people who are interested in training. Like, one of the things I always like about your emails is you talk about, like, making a fitness plan, like, geared towards people. Like individuals, right? And different body types and different plans for different people. Like, we're not all one type, so one plan's not going to work for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, you can tie that into gardening too. Like, just, you know, one size fits all gardening advice doesn't work, because I guarantee what works for you in Montana won't work for me in Florida, and vice versa, you know, as far as tips and when to plant and things like that. So, you know, it's the same thing on the health side of things. It's the same thing for me. I'm more focused on running and coaching runners to work towards whatever goals that they might have, but I just don't buy into that idea that, you know, what works for me as a runner works for you as the runner, works for the next person as a runner. That every, you know, to get the best, or to be the best that we can be, we have to work within, you know, kind of the framework of what we have and where we are right now, and work to get better. So, you know, with the coaching that I do and what I try to do through the podcast and the blog and the emails and everything that I do is just kind of help people to do that, to you know, one size fits one instead of one size fits all. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of my philosophy when it comes to just about anything, is that, you know, you got to do what works best for you, and everybody's going to have something slightly different. But, you know, if you want to catch up with me or reach out to me, it's pretty much Diz Runs everywhere. So just DizRuns is the website, DizRuns.com, and social media. If you just, you know, look for Diz Runs, that's going to be me. There's, as far as I know, there's no other imposters yet. I haven't gotten popular enough to have a bunch of wannabe Twitter and Instagram profiles of Diz Runs. It's just pretty much me. So you can find me and connect, and I'm always happy to talk running or gardening or whatever. I just like to connect. So you know, if I sound remotely interesting, come say hi and let me know, and I'd be glad to chat with you a bit.
Okay. And I'll put links to your website and your Facebook group. You have a Facebook group? You do, right?
I do, yeah. 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 It's just Diz Runs. I mean, again, if you just search Diz Runs in the thing, there's a page, a like page and a group page, and you just head over to the group. I think it's technically Diz Runs Tribe or something like that. But if you just search Diz Runs on Facebook, it'll pop right up. There's, like I said, there's two of us. One is a like, and one is a group. So come join the group, and it's a lively group over there. So lots of fun and lots of support. No matter, you know, whether you're new to running or whether you're a Boston qualifier, we let everybody in, and everybody has a good time supporting each other and cheering each other on. So it's a fun place to be.
And it's not just for people in Florida, right? It's for people.
No. Yeah. We've got worldwide. We're international. Wherever you are.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for coming and sharing with us, Denny. Yeah. Have a great day. Stay warm. And I'll let you know as soon as I get this up.
All right, Jackie. Thanks so much.
Did you know that you could support the Organic Gardener podcast without doing anything differently? If you're going to buy something on Amazon.com, since I'm an Amazon affiliate, if you go to Amazon through a link on my page, which every book that is listed on my website is linked to Amazon.com, you don't have to buy that book, but anything you buy that day from Amazon will give me a very, very small commission, but I got to tell you, it would sure help pay for, you know, just some of the basics it costs to keep the podcast up there. So if you like what you hear and you did want to give me just a little bit of support, that would be a great way for you to do it. If you're already going to Amazon to purchase something, like I said, all the books are linked up to because I am an Amazon affiliate. And so just if you didn't know anything, you don't have to buy that specific book, but just if you go to Amazon through my website, they do still give me a commission. So thanks for your support.